Good evening. It's been a while since I've been up here, but I look out. Most of the faces I know, a number of you I do not know. So before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for coming tonight. I'd like to thank all of you for the support that you've given to the congregation for the mission outreach. When we first moved here in April of 1998, the mission budget for the congregation was only for local evangelism. Since that time, our budget has increased so much that at times we never have a problem finding where to spend money, but we found that the work that we can do and the help that we can give others is appreciated so much, a whole lot more than what we realize. And this is the case of this trip that Cleo and Judy and Lorene and I made. It was a trip into Africa with a trip into the unknown, but it was definitely a trip that was I would not have traded for anything. As we begin this, if the leadership team, if they would stand up, a number of you don't know who they are: Paul Gidden, Glenn Andrew, Cleo, David Power, Ken Coleman. In addition, we have Bradley Welburn on the team. We have Tennessee Bill Malone. And I think that's all. But in this particular project that we had, in 2006, Ralph Williams, who has been involved with Bear Valley Biblical Institute in planning churches throughout the world. I mean, they have gone into Eastern Europe. The work in Cambodia that the Welburns are involved in. Ralph is involved in that. But Ralph has also been involved in East Africa, in particular in Tanzania, for a number of years. Well, in 2006, Francis Wachesa, who you will get to know a little bit later on in the program, had made a decision. He wanted to go home. He wanted to go home and to continue the type of work that he'd been doing in Tanzania. The congregation in Hattiesburg, Pennsylvania, the Kensington Woods congregation, made a decision that because of their commitment in Tanzania, they were not in a position to continue the work in Uganda. So all of a sudden, Ralph and Bear Valley were looking for a sponsoring congregation. They made the presentation to our congregation, and in 2007, the decision was made to support that work. We went into this having never done this before. We went into this thinking we knew, oh, this won't be a problem. We know all the answers. We went into this with our, we had a number of surprises. This is the second report that we've made so far to the congregation. The first report was made by Paul and Dave last year on their trip. We're trying to touch on different material than what they had touched on. But this is the team that made the trip. On your right, you have Ralph and Cindy Williams, Judy and Cleo Tarver, and then Lorene and I. This was taken at the end of the trip when we all looked fresh. We were going to include some pictures from when we first arrived, and we decided, no, wasn't a good. As you travel and you look in this, we flew overnight into Amsterdam. Then we flew down to Nairobi, Kenya, had a layover there, and flew into Kampala. From Kampala, from Entebbe, we drove up to Kampala and spent the night. Let me go back one. If you notice on the countries that are around this, you have the Republic of Congo. The next map is going to have it as Zaire. You have Tanzania. You have Kenya. You have Rwanda. And right here, the little bottom one is Burundi. The school of preaching in Uganda is drawing from Kenya, from Uganda, from the Congo, and from Burundi. Rwanda is going into Tanzania predominantly. There are people that we support in the Congo separate from this, but the work in the Americans, it's not safe for Americans to still go to the Congo. And so as a result, it's just we're having to rely on Francis as to what the results of the work are there. But when we arrived in Uganda, after Kampala, we drove all the way across the southern pier over here to the right to the Kenyan border. And on that, that's where we came to the town of Busia. When we arrived in Busia, the gentlemen in the pink shirts are taxi drivers. No motorized taxi drivers, no three-wheel bikes. If you want to take a taxi, you sit on the back of the bicycle. I didn't try it. It probably would not have been pretty. But from paved roads all the way across, we step back in time. From Busia South to Lake Victoria, these are the normal roads, and this is all that we have. This is at the end of the road. So it was considerably drier than what it normally is. Nothing but mud. Just to think that it's not just Uganda traveling out of Nairobi, Kenya, on the only road going into down to Tanzania with all the traffic, we were backed up leaving Nairobi because of cattle in the road. It's a situation that exists in Africa. It's a situation that you have to have patience with. If you're in a hurry, there are speed bumps in the middle of the road. It's impossible to slow for you to make time. We finally reached Lake Victoria, second largest freshwater lake in the world. A lot of fishing, a lot of tilapia is farmed there. But to give an idea how close we are, these mountains right here are Kenya. So we are literally right on the border. On that other picture where we saw the taxi drivers, about 200 yards ahead was the actual border crossing point. Let me turn this over. But the actual Uganda, the school itself, it's motivated and is by Francis Wachesa and Margaret. Francis and Margaret visited here in January, I think 2008, but they visited the congregation. And at that time, they were out of their environment. We are out of our environment here. But they are some of the nicest people, some of the most giving people, and in ways that you don't see until you're in your home and you're around them. But Francis, to give you an idea about it, Francis was born in 1951. He and Margaret have four children. He became a Christian in 1978. Now, this is not a story, and the next story, this is not a story that we heard from Francis or from Ralph Martin, who is in Arusha, Tanzania. He said when Francis became a member, he was working as a waiter in a restaurant. When he became a Christian, he realized that his old life had to be behind him. He went to the owner of the restaurant and told him about the employees who had been cheating him. And then Francis paid to him everything that he owed the owner of the restaurant. This is what motivated him from being a very, very young Christian. From there, he went on to the Botswana School of Preaching, where in this is, but he also worked as a missionary in Arusha. He became the director of the Arusha Bible School, which is in north central Tanzania. He worked with the Tanzania 2000 program, 2006 until now. He's been working in Uganda. The main object of the school evangelism is right now there are 12 students in the school. They teach in two languages. One is English, the other is Swahili. The English is taught mainly for students from Uganda and Kenya because they are fluent in English. The Swahili is taught students coming from Tanzania, from the Congo, and from Burundi. Objectives of the school, actually fairly simple. Training gospel preachers. I got to use the time, but got it behind me too. Conduct personal evangelism and vocation. Each in themselves is a major undertaking, but in this, because the preachers, when they leave the school, are not supported by anybody from the U.S., and they have to be self-sufficient. The vocational training is going to consist of raising the animals, chickens, goats, and pigs. One of the objectives Francis has with the pigs is that when some of you graduate from high school, you want a car or you want a vacation, the graduates of the school get a piglet, because that is their subsistence. Now, if you got a pig, Chad, if your parents gave you a pig, what would you think? I know you wouldn't. But this to them is a big thing: beekeeping, carpentry, and welding. This is the current class of 12 who will be graduating next month, September in November. The classroom has originally been held in the congregation where in the church building where that Francis and his family had built. This is a picture of them in that classroom. In addition to that, every week we go out and do personal evangelism. And it's not just something that if they want to do, it's something that they have to do. And they go to all the neighboring villages and do this work. By experience, bicycles are the best way for them to get around. From the roads that we saw before, vehicles do not do well. Some motorcycles on those roads, but the people that were getting by the best were on bicycles or walking, because you're zigzagging. We never drove on the proper side of the road. It was always back and forth because of the mud holes. Is it going to go? There it is. Okay. When you drive past Francis's house on the road, this is the first view of the school that you have. Up to the front gate, it's almost has the fortress look from the road, but as far as security, it's not that secure. That brick wall goes all the way across the front of the building, and then down the side you have perimeter fencing. This particular plot is the 6-acre plot that we will talk about later. One of the that we had was inflation and a civil war in Kenya. Everything that comes into Uganda comes through Kenya. The road that that we drove when we drove from Nairobi to go down to Tanzania drove right through the area where the civil war. Lee Martin told us that Malians, that when they were refugees coming into Kenya, and when they came, not their goats. They didn't just come for a visit. They didn't come and planning on going home. They moved to Kenya. They planned on staying for the rest of their lives. And it was in cultures. But because of the difference, we've had to break the project down into two phases, and a phase two. Now, the first stage is this one right here. It's going to go. Each dorm room will house 12 students. There's a lavatory on each one. So when the school is up and completely functional, there will be it can handle 36 students at one time. In addition, there will be 3 classrooms and 1 library. This picture was taken at the beginning of September. The way the school looks right now. All the walls are brick walls, interior and exterior. There's a wooden ceiling, and they then apply a cement mixture for it. Now with the rough, fill in all the cracks and all the joints, and then a stucco coat on the outside of that. Building that you would, it looks right now. The only thing that's missing here right now, the dormitory building is complete. If you look and you can see all 3 of those. The rooms themselves are finished like this, and this is what it looks like with the bunks inside. They put 12 people in there, stacked. In addition to that, all as Sam Bradley said, stop a minute. These, to them, are fairly modern toilets. If, as you get to know my wife, she has stories that she can share with you as she's shaking her head. In addition to that, there's three toilets. There's also three showers. You can see one door, the two door, and three doors. So each one of the three rooms have sufficient lavatory and shower space. I was thinking, but it didn't come into it. Is an extremely precious commodity. Pictures of everywhere. Forth from the river. Because water supply is uncertain in drought periods of time, there's one stream going down in the back of the property. A decision was made to dig a well. Very. If you know, this is a 2,000-liter water tank that is going to be placed. In fact, it's already there on top of that. So they, in essence, they have a ready source of water at the school. Looking out now, this is standing behind the classrooms. You look at the back of the property. The property goes all the way back to this ridge line right here. But you have this property in here, which will eventually be vocational. You have orchard here. You have pasture here. And across the back, you have all of that is gardens. Looking over towards the pasture side of it, the goats that are there right now are Francis's goats. but this is the type of shelter that is used for the goats. Remember this shelter. We're going to see something similar to this again. In here with the orchard, they're growing mangoes, avocados, and oranges. And something that we're used to in Texas is raised bed planting. At the end of the rainy season, this is the water table. The water table is this high. So because of this, and the fact they've had to dig trenches, they would fill it in, and they end up not flower beds, but all of the vegetable garden will be in raised beds. They found that in the back part of the garden that I showed earlier, rot. And in fact, and the plants were dying. So they had to go to this. Kitchen facilities. Cleo smiles. This building, we'll come back to later, was the first church building that they have. But when the school was located in the church building here, this was the kitchen, the students. So when we saw this, we thought, well, you know, but this is rather austere until we looked at Francis Brothers Dixon's house. This is the kitchen that they use for all their meals in the home every day. They have an area here. They all cook with charcoal. They have an area here, and this vents outside, but this point right here vents right into the cookhouse. Now you look at this. Paul and Dave missed this when they were on their trip, but this was the 5-star dining that we had where we stayed. All our meals were cooked at this location. We had candlelight meals every night. The electricity was. As a result of that, with the students moving over actually to the school, what Francis did was the fact he took leftover material that he had on site, and based on what you have seen before, this is now the temporary kitchen that they have built. It's just on the west end of the dorm building. Once the permanent kitchen is built, then they will go ahead, and this building is now built so that they can use it for other projects. Second stage. Those two buildings you've seen here are constructed. The second stage is going to be a canopy built in the middle. We took pictures when we were in Arusha school there. This picture are pictures of what the canopy looked like. This one is 48 foot square, and the one that's going to be built in in Uganda will be similar. And this is more than just somewhere for them to get out of. This has become the area of communications is going to become a dining area for the students, is going to be for the congregate, for different area-wide meetings, delegates, things. The temperature, we are just about 1 degree equator. The temperatures are actually fairly constant, but the sun is intense. In 2 hours outside, to a crisp. I was surprised how hot it was. Congregate. The main, well, it's a term that I use. You ever want to find out the strength of a congregation comes to Sunday night worship and the Wednesday night Bible study, because at those times is when you will see the main people or the people that are the strength of a congregation. Well, the strength in the church in Southeast Uganda is actually Francis and family. You've met and you've seen Francis and Margaret. This is Dixon, which is Francis' brother, but he's also the preacher at the local congregation. This is Francis and Margaret's son, Paul. This is his wife, Susan. This is Francis' mother. They said with a life expectancy in Uganda of definitely in the early 60s, she is in her mid-80s. I mean, she has lived much longer than what most people around. And this young lady is Umi, that Francis and Margaret, she came as an orphan from Tanzania, and she will live with them. And until she finally graduates. Like I said earlier, this was the first congregation that was built on Francis, on the Witchess's property. They made the decision to build the congregations on their property so that they had some, so if other people were coming into it, they wouldn't have problems of buildings being used for other than church buildings. The church building is now this building, and it was basically just divided in half up until about 3 months ago. This half was congregation. This half here was living area for the 12 students that we saw earlier. Inside, this is the area where at Paul and Dave's presentation last year, we saw the congregation meeting together and where Dave recorded the singing. When we were driving up to Basia, Francis asked us to stop along the way because he wanted to show us a new congregation. And this is where that new congregation is meeting. It's actually one of the better built structures that we saw like this. They need protection from the sun, probably some from the rain, but most of the structures we see like this are open air. But just when you think that you get too comfortable, this was sent to by us to Francis, a brand new congregation. You remember that sheep and goat structure that we saw earlier? This is what they're meeting in. Now, those of you who know me, this is all perspective. Since this is sheep and goats, I would say that the congregations are meeting on the sheep end of the building rather than the goat side. A more mature congregation is the one in Arusha. Those of you who might know him, this is Cy Stafford. He's been there a few years, 5 year commitment to them, and so he's going to be there for a considerable amount of time. But one of the things that we found that was interesting to us is the fact when church service is over, it's sort of like at a wedding. The front row exits first, and they go to the back. Anybody who's standing at the back, they shake hands with those people. And then they get in the line. And then they, as each row exits, they come out, they shake hands with everyone who's in the line, and then they keep working their way down until finally the entire congregation will filed out, shaken hands and spoken to everybody that's here. You think we can pull that off here? No. Yeah. I see a lot of shakes and no nods. The Bible talks about living water. In Africa, they look at living water as being something much, much different. They would, the buildings do not have baptisms in them. They prefer to be baptized in what they say living water, or water that naturally stream, whether it be a pond. Located in on the backside of their property. One of the things that was interesting, the fact is, when we have a baptism here, right before they're baptized, we ask for a confession of faith. You believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. But here they have another question that they ask them. They ask if there's a group who is family, because the ones that are going to go into the water. Other members of the group that will then beat the water to drive away the swimming cobras and the pythons that do live in this water. They have killed them and brought them in that water. We didn't, but they were down there. Another issue, which I on back, we saw a lot of moss. Cleo and I were looking, we think this picture was taken in Kenya, but we can't remember for sure. In Uganda, we didn't see as many crossing in southern Uganda. I know that because North Uganda borders Sudan, there are major problems there, and that when Tyrone was in Ethiopia, that the people he was teaching were Sudanese refugees because of the Muslim areas. Kenya had a mosque. When we got to Tanzania, every town had a mosque. And what we found out later was the fact that Saudi Arabia came in and bought in every town on the major highways in the entire country. Boaz told us that some of these mosques only have one or two people in them. There's no one there teaching, everything's recorded, but that when you drive the towns, every town you see a mosque. The story of Jesus is important to be told. So when you go through this, I equate this as the story is in the eyes. A number of you probably watch the Discovery Channel or the Travel Channel and have seen in South America how they prepare cassava. Well, there is a different type of cassava that is grown in Uganda. It is a main food staple. About between 2 and 3 years ago, cassava is a type of plant that is tuberous. It's not something that you harvest every year. You leave it in the ground until you need some, and then you go out and you dig it. Well, back in about 2006, early 2007, they went out there, and all the cassava had a virus, which means they could not eat it at all. But it was too late in order for them to plant a replacement. So as a result, there was rampant famine that went into Uganda in particular, but all throughout that area. When Cleo and I were meeting with Francis and Ralph, Judy and Lorraine had an opportunity to sit down and meet with Margaret, and she's the one who talked about this. But one of the things that she said was, once a person is severely malnourished and you have food again, you can't start feeding them because their system can't take it. But there's a gruel mixture that's made up of wheat, soy, peas, and maize. If you take 1 kilo of each, that will feed a family of five for 2 days. And it was just the fact that they were aware of that. I know that certain things touched our hearts when we were there, but this is one of the things that did. And with Lorraine and Judy, this definitely with the children touched their hearts. It's something that mixture that I said cost for 2 days food for a family of five cost about $1.50, which is, and this helps them bring them back from starvation. This particular young man that you see here is on the picture of Francis' family, Dixon, who was Francis' brother, is a preacher. They had three children. This is their middle child. Dixon and his wife both are HIV positive. Their middle child has AIDS. there's nothing that they can do for him. This was probably, you look in his eyes, and just, like I said, the story is in the eyes. It's a trusting soul. Doesn't know what he has coming for him, but it was something that really was heartbreaking. Different children all around the property. Children are coming. They're members of the congregation. They're children from everywhere. This was actually taken with these children. A lot of them had a look of despair. You go down to Tanzania now, eyes are much brighter. Children are much better taken care of. Don't have much more, but they're still taken care of. This gentleman right here, this was in Arusha, came up to me and said, I want to have my picture taken. And so he is actually a Messiah. Not many Messiahs are members of the church. We didn't ask how many wives he had. I was just told two. Two is a small number for the Messiah. That means he doesn't have many cows. This young man here is Charles. His parents died of AIDS. He heard that he could get help at Francis and Margaret's house. He showed up there. They are now taking care of him. People, the word has spread throughout the community, and they will raise him as their own son. Status of the work. Like we talked before, when phase one is complete, dorm rooms, classrooms and library, and the canopy. When I showed you that temporary kitchen that's actually located just over in this area right here, just off to the side here. In phase one, we have 20 acres of land. We have the 6 acres that are fenced, or where the school is at. There are 10 acres that have been purchased for a primary school and for farming. And there was 4 acres that the government of Uganda came to Francis and said, if you will purchase the land, we will build a secondary school on it, and you will be able to teach Bible in the school. So all that land has been purchased. And dorms and classroom, canopy will be finished, temporary kitchen, well, and furnishings. To give you an update, land and purchase cost us about $35,000. Construction costs for what you see in phase one, $190,000, the furnishings about $20,000, for a total of $245,000. Like I said earlier, because of the Civil War and because of inflation, we had hoped around $200,000 to $220,000, we could have built the entire project. We have found that is not going to happen. So what we've had to do is just we've had to take it in stages. One of the things to remember is the fact that none of this work and none of this money is coming from contributions. I mean, from the weekly contributions that the members are making. All of it is coming from special contributions that people are making above and beyond. The actual operation of the school is budgeted into the congregational budget, but the actual building of the school is not. After phase one and phase two are finished, there will be one additional building here, which will be the same size as the classrooms and the library, and then and a building here. Let's see, so I get the actual names. This building right here is actually going to be the support building facility. It will have kitchens, they have instructor accommodations. There are a lot of instructors that come from the United States, and they're either staying where we're staying with very little or spotty electricity. They're staying in Busia, which is about 15 miles of mud away, or eventually they will be able to stay at the school. And then the other administration building is computer lab, offices, printing facilities, Jesus has grandiose plans. He wants to put a radio station in there as well. You have to plan. Now, what happens, develop, it is difficult to say. Results to date, 5 students will be graduating in November. 8 congregations have been established by students who are by people who are still just students. They're not doing this full time. Out of that, over 100 baptisms. This has been the last 2 years. The land has been purchased. Buildings nearly complete for phase one. Canopy construction pending. Furnishings pending. Does this work? At times, people say, well, there's no American, there's no missionary there. From talking to the people in Chamala, the cost of keeping American missionaries there is very, very expensive per month. By keeping Ugandans there, we found that we have a lot more outreach and a lot more teaching by using them rather than trying to keep an American there. This is the congregation that's in Chamala, Tanzania. If you get a chance to read this book, I was sorry. I said, I'm sorry that I didn't read it before I went. Once I read it, I said, I'm glad I read it after I went. But it was written by Eldred Eccles, and there's a chapter in there that talks about, I learned his name is Don Dealey, but Guy and Jesse Lee Caskey arrived in Tanganyika, which is the old German name for the country, when it was a German colony, in 1957, with their 2 children, David and Judy. With few exceptions, there have been missionaries, full-time missionaries there, throughout from the late 1950s until now. These two right here, let's go back. Chris and Tam Rayner and Bill and Cindy Stinson. Chris and Tam have been there for 6 years. They'll be going home soon. Bill and Cindy have been there less than 2 years. They're going to be there for quite a while longer. But as a result of the work that was started back in the late 1950s, there's an active for over 100 members in that one. There's a hospital that was started, primary school that's up and operating. There's a secondary school that's being constructed. There's also a school of preaching in English and a school of preaching in Swahili. The elementary school. A couple of quotes from the book. Don Dealey was 12 when I first saw Red Eccles. A tiny little black boy shivering on the doorstep in the cold gray dawn of an African mountain morning. He was blind in one eye, and a tattered old piece of cloth which served as his garment did not hide his thin chest or his spindly arms and legs. He looked as though he had never in his whole life had one good meal, and he probably hadn't. But the thing that stuck with me most forcefully was his face. Not the death-head thinness of his skin stretched tautly over his forehead and cheekbones, but the indomitable spirit that blazed from one good eye. The resolute firmness of his small chin. It was the face of a little boy grown old, his childhood lost forever. In some twilight of he had come. And then a little later in the same chapter. Then one day, Don Dealey was hired by the school to work with them. As a young man. Then one day, he was at the door, and it was clear that his visit was of significance. Finally, the next time we made a trip to town of Mbeya for supplies. I was naturally curious to see how Don Dealey was going to squander his accumulated wages amidst all the temptations and glamour of soccer balls and soda pop. When he came back to the car, he was lugging a large bundle, and he walked side of a prince of the realm, undid the course of sisal string and heavy paper. Inside were 2 cheap yellow cotton blankets. Taken aback, I asked, "What did you get these for, Don Dealey?" "The babies are crying with the cold," he replied. we had the pleasure of meeting Don Dealey when we were there. It was actually quite emotional when we whether he was going to be alive or not. But it was all for us standing on the. It was actually good to. Now a lot of you are newer to this congregation. A number of you know the answer to this question, but after you read the and you realize that they were living in austere conditions, hunting for their food, killing wild animals, and then you say, "And who is Judy Caskey?" And when you see her today, a much gentler soul. This is Don Dealey, taken in May. Still thin, but always smiling. It was a pleasure to meet him. Judy made a comment to him. He says, "Don Dealey, when the day of judgment comes, I want to make sure that you're in heaven. So I want you to continue to be faithful to the Lord." And that all of us need to keep to remember. We all need to remain faithful to the Lord. But just as students have an opportunity to go out and teach, this message is not just for Africa, or not just for South America, or not just for somewhere else. This message is also, this is for us. Jesus Christ died for our sins. That is something that was a gift that was freely offered to us. But this is something that we don't have to take advantage of, but it's something that we take advantage of. In Galatians 3:27, it says, "For all of you who were baptized into Christ have included yourself with Christ." Tonight, each of us who have not taken that opportunity have that opportunity. We can clothe ourselves with Jesus Christ by putting him on in baptism. There's really no better time than right now. As we stand and sing, if you care to, would you please come? Thank you.
King of my life, I crown thee now, thine shall be.